The lift hits the 15th floor of Christine's door. She's jobless, just sits indoors. No furniture at all, but a pristine Ford.
Hello, my name's Chris Unit, and welcome to the first of the Created in Birmingham podcasts. For our first interview, we took the chance to meet up with Soweto Kinch, the award-winning jazz saxophonist, MC, producer, poet and inspirational figure behind the Flyover Show, which takes place under the Hockley Flyover on the 31st of May. He talked to Frankie Ward about the background to the show, his future projects and his own struggles with genre classification that he's dubbed the War in Iraq.
In Iraq?
Yeah.
I was wondering how that was going.
Yeah, it's an ongoing situation, I suppose, and this is a major coup d'etat for me personally. Mm. This Flyover Show really does correspond to the War in Iraq idea. The fact that along's come this huge monolithic musical entity called Urban, which is some holdover for everything that's previously called black music.
Yeah.
And I find it's horribly reductionist. So we've got grime on the bill, we've got jazz, we've got reggae, we've got hip-hop, we've got just community poetry, we've got theatre, and it's all within the gamut of urban expression, but without that tag and without all the kind of negative connotations that go with it.
Yeah.
And it's also a major thing to reclaim these spaces, these derelict areas, and say, enough gun activity, gang associations and postcode rivalries, we just want to make something beautiful and artistic for the day.
Do you think like urban tends to be connected with that kind of thing? Do you see like the bad side of things? Like you get a lot of bad press in publications like Daily Mail, and it's just like
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, for better or for worse, I think some of the more pejorative statements about the negative inferences to be made about the very common black culture people say through urban, the word urban, and they wouldn't necessarily feel as comfortable saying.
Yeah.
It happened for me at the Urban Music Awards, and I'm there hanging out, and throughout the day while they're preparing for it, they're like, oh, we're going to need extra security, you know, extra security system, and it possibly did, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was the way it was communicated, like, well, you know what it's like in these urban events, this is just very much an urban thing.
Mm.
And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more you sort of expect that these things are going to kick off, people act up to that.
Yeah.
Think, well, I've got to establish my rep, I've got to, you know, depose somebody who's head honcho in these kind of contexts.
Yeah.
And actually, most people here are ordinary, they're just working regular jobs, they're cleaners, they're school teachers, they're, you know.
But in the video on your MySpace of the Hockley Flyover, when you're talking about having it there, you say, or someone else says, that these kids, they'd rather run across the road and go underneath.
Mm.
And that no one wants to take their family underneath, let alone a concert. So what gave you the idea to put it there? Is that to prove you don't need the security or just, you know?
Well, it was always ironic and clear in going into that space. So whilst there were discarded syringes and mess and everything that's foreboding about it, the actual space itself physically lends itself perfectly to a concert. It feels like an amphitheatre when you look at the architecture and the stage and the sound dimensions in there, and you think, well, it's almost as if the city planners imagined that with the time of building it.
Hmm.
But by decay and neglect, they've allowed this situation to happen. And how does the community even... It's the kind of thing you walk past, you know what I mean, and don't, unless you stop and think, why aren't there more things happening in these areas? It would just carry on and continue to be derelict.
Yeah, and it's been 2 years in the making.
That's
How is it, like, is it stage by stage? How is it, how did you first manage, you know, when did you first realise this could happen? Like,
that's a really interesting point. I mean, the first time I had the idea, it tailed on largely from the concept of the album itself, A Life in the Day of B19, even though this isn't physically B19.
Mm-hmm.
Urban inner city areas like that, which the story was based,
I'm
feeling, well, let me do a big show that kind of theatrically brings all of these themes to life and makes use of the space. And the whole album, the concept was trying to be a little unconventional by fusing jazz and allowing the story and hip-hop to kind of do its thing. So that, I tried in vain to kind of get more traction from city council people.
Mm.
And in explaining the concept, they all kind of said, it's a good idea, but didn't fully, they come back and say stuff like, well, why don't you just do it in a park, or not doing it in a concert hall, and didn't really have a grasp of artistically why I want to do something as kooky as that. Secondly, there was nobody in their bureaucracy, even though there's a million and one telephone numbers that they were telling me to call. And this person's on leave, but call that person there. And nobody actually could give me a concrete sense of direction of who or how to get this actioned.
Yeah.
There's the arts department, there's the parks and sports department, there's the, you know, community liaisons, the regeneration people, and they don't necessarily talk, they're in very separate offices. So from that point, it was like, okay, we approached to get some support, and then the idea petered out, and it was every single year getting just that little bit closer. And it wasn't until I started speaking with New Century Arts, who I'm keenly involved with, and getting more leverage there, and also Claire Edwards,
who's a key
link there. And I did gig with last year and thought, wow, she's got experience in managing these big public arts events.
Yeah.
Once she was on board, you know, the thing really developed some legs.
Okay. So she's had a big
kind
of input, yeah.
Definitely.
How long has she been on board for?
Since just the end of last year, I think we're talking about.
End of 2007?
End of 2007.
So it's kind of suddenly gathered momentum and suddenly it's here. Like, that's 5 months, really. It's been really...
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah. Are you going to be showcasing any of Basement Fables there?
Absolutely. Some sneak previews.
Okay.
I'm so eager to get the album out, but for all sorts of industry reasons, some of which I mentioned, the war in Iraq. And, you know, just label politics and all of that. I'm choosing to hold back on some of the material until that's all sorted. But we're going to perform it anyway because I'm so excited, and hopefully whet people's appetites to rush out and buy it when it comes out.
There's like a cliffhanger at the end of B19, isn't
there? Right.
So is it going to be answered on Saturday?
No.
No?
It will be further cliffhangers.
Okay.
Dangling from the cliff further.
Okay, to make people want some more.
Exactly.
Was it during...
Until the full album comes out.
Sorry. Was it during April 2007?
That's right.
Over a year ago.
Absolutely. But the best things in life are worth waiting for.
Yeah, it must be pretty tense for you.
It is pretty frustrating,
you know
what I mean? But there's no point putting it out in the wrong season at the wrong time.
Okay.
And without the right kind of support behind it.
Yeah.
And as I said, alluding to some of the stuff that's in the war in Iraq, unless it gets the platform for people to make a fair and unbiased judgment of the technical content, I'm not going to put it there to say, well, it's in the jazz section and the poorer cousin of everything else.
Yeah.
It's unashamedly jazz music. It's unashamedly hip-hop.
Mm.
But we just kind of want an audience to... A level playing field for an audience to make their own mind up.
Yeah.
You know, so until there's the right publicity behind it, the right racking...
The right racking, it, I mean, that's the big issue. I mean, have you personally spoken to anyone from, like, HMV and stuff? Like, have you managed to get... to the kind of top, closer to the top, to like talk to anyone there?
Yeah, and been met with what can only be described as a slap in the face by a wet fish. I'm not quite sure, you know, that you give a myriad of different reasons as to why it couldn't happen, but it always, I think, comes down to, well, you're a specialist artist. And I've supported KRS-One, I've worked with Ty, I've been a freestyle MC since my teens, I rap. So if they wanted to come down from the boardroom and discuss with me, if they saw fit, the merits and demerits of hip-hop, or wanted to freestyle, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
But when there's people who don't rap, who don't know about hip-hop culture, making really powerful and affecting decisions about what gets seen and what doesn't.
Yeah, another thing you said was, I'm just telling you what you said now, but the businessmen's deciding what is and what isn't hip-hop.
Sure.
You know,
sure, it has implications. Because if they're making it on purely commercial terms, commercial criteria, it's only the salacious, impressive stuff. And there's an innate contradiction. On the one hand, we're saying, well, this music's responsible for kids getting stabbed right across this the country. But yet, the only stuff that we promote and actively champion and say this is British hip-hop, or hip-hop in general, is stuff which glorifies a kind of edgy, angry, urban angst. I find it's more increasingly important for us as artists to create our own platforms.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so excited to have people like Bashy and Ty, and Esker, John ZD, Zena, you know, right up until Andy Hamilton and Jazz Veteran, saying that actually there's a continuity here.
Yeah.
It's not that we're in our separate realms and never speak. There's a baton being passed from Andy Hamilton's generation to Basil Gabberdin and yeah. Steel Pulse, and it's one continuum of exciting music that's all created in this country.
Yeah. Would you say that, like, then, okay, so, like, there's been a change between, you know, the original record, Conversations of the Unseen, okay. So that's 2002, was it?
2003.
Okay, yeah. And then B19's 2004. Sorry, I was thinking there's a 4-year gap. Came out wrong. Sorry.
Stop the tape.
It's my first case of Birmingham. I've got an excuse. Commercial break now. Chris, your friend wanted to know, it was like the change kind of thing between, like, I mean, is there more frustration, do you think, with B19 than there is with...
Frustration? Not artistically,
but, like, in what your message is, kind of thing, like...
No, not really. I'm the same guy who was before. I feel like, actually, B19 as a whole album project, the first and second part, was the first time I really got to create the right framework for me to express myself in both jazz and in hip-hop terms. And without hopefully compromising any iota of integrity in both forms of music. You know, people say, oh, it's the same thing. It's not. There's a jazz heritage, there's a jazz tradition which needs to be respected. And I feel like my first album was partly a homage to the great saxophone players who come before. And with greater maturation, I think there'll be other statements, perhaps, which again will defy genre classification. I hope will defy genre classification, because I don't think anybody creates music from that place of... Well, hopefully they don't, but it's like, well, I need to create something that's 40% reggae now, or that has a bit of folk and country to capture that market. You know, honesty and integrity as an artist means capturing where I am at a particular point in time. And B19 was very much that, you know, from songs that were written as soon as I finished at uni and came back and was signing on. Do you know what I mean? That was a real experience to... waiting at bus stops and garnering stuff from ordinary life and trying to imbue it with the drama and grandeur of a hip-hopper or something, you know, and also finding the context for jazz. So it wasn't frustration at all, actually, more release and liberation to be able to do that.
Have you had any, like, kind of, what's feedback been like from, like, you know, established jazz artists and then hip-hop artists? Have you had kind of a lot of feedback from them, or...?
Nothing but positives. And I've been, you know... relieved that I thought I find musicians are tremendously understanding and audiences understanding. They don't feel like all this rap stuff is over my head, because I think the story itself and hopefully the cohesiveness between the music that we make whilst I'm rapping and the music while we're playing, it's just engaging. Engaging, that's what an audience wants. They don't want to feel like, well, if they're not too territorial, they don't want to wave a flag and say, well, I'm just a jazz head. It's usually critics, in fact, who have more of a barrier to accepting, or an industry, as we've discussed before. You feel like we need to compartmentalise.
Yeah, to John, everything has to be a genre. Yeah.
So we know who to market it to. We know what kind of assumptions to make about this artist before he comes along. And for me, you know, I find it horribly reductionist as a person, not least as a musician. You know, I think all of us are capable of being cerebral 1 minute. And juvenile the next. If we're healthy, normal human beings, we can laugh at a joke and put on our suit and tie and be in the boardroom the next day, and moments of sagacity and moments of folly are part and parcel of a normal human day. So that's what the album is about, more than anything.
And then Basement Fables that continues that.
Cool. And if I was to give anything away, it would be silly, so I'm not going to do it. It's perhaps a slightly more political, in the sense of confronting some of my attitude towards the music industry.
So it's more based at music rather than, like, lifestyle, is it?
Equally,
is that what you mean?
Both. And I think it's more of a commentary on the circumstances around me and music industry. Again, through metaphor and through humour and through jokes, I'm not one to get up on the soapbox and say, this is wrong, this is evil. But, you know, hopefully people will get it and see what I'm saying through more or less humorous means.
And I guess, I mean, hopefully Flyover Show, that's going to kind of, that's going to, I think that will show people around. You know what I mean? It will give people, you know, that's going to hit the lifestyle thing, and that album's going to hit the music, maybe.
Yeah. Good work. I don't see too much of a differentiation to be made between the two.
No.
The whole point is that the lifestyle informs.
It's music, yeah.
Yeah, the context informs the music. I'm not wanting to tie myself away in Ivory Tower or to go off to, you know, I think I need to write my album in LA. I'm just not that way inclined. I'll go to LA for a holiday, get inspired and hang out with some great producers, but at the end of the day, a foundation is what creates my artistic voice and knowing where I've come from and the kind of ordinary, inverted commas, lives that inform that will be something I think that I'll continue.
So you like, I mean, that's why, is that why you live in Birmingham? Is that you kind of want
to
say?
Partly. I mean, it doesn't mean to say I won't ever live anywhere else or I'm committed to living in the inverted commas ghetto for the rest of my life. But I think having one's feet on the ground personally is important, no matter where I am, you know, that I'll never be the type, I don't think, to say, well, you know, I need a bodyguard to keep people more than 20 feet from me. I want to be up in people's faces and speaking to ordinary people.
Like on Broad Street.
On Broad Street, yeah. And then afterwards, if they then want to realise, oh, he's got awards and blah, blah, blah. Wow, we met him, that's cool. But that's certainly not something that I want to actively, you know, push out there before I push my music.
So you weren't fazed by any of the nominations and the awards and the accolades then?
Happy. Fazed is, yeah, not fazed. Just grateful. I think it is anything that allows greater visibility for my work.
Yeah.
And lets people just see and make up their own minds. That's what I'm all about, really.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to ask, Chris?
I was going to ask, are any of the acts from Livebox going to be playing at the Flyover Show?
Absolutely. We run an event, Now the Drum, every Sunday. We do it in season, so the next kind of batch of gigs is after September this year, and it's called the Livebox. It's amazing. We've got all kinds of, you know, really exciting jazz and hip-hop artists there, and yes, some of them are going to be appearing under the Flyover Show. Birmingham Rap Stalwarts, Sonny Jim and Cosign, they've appeared with me there at the Livebox a fair bit. And we have kind of comedic freestyle battles there, the Battle in the Box. So we do that, and they're going to be bringing a couple of their tunes really down on the day. Ty's performed with us at the Livebox. He's going to be there. Eska, pretty much everybody actually on the bill has at some point passed through the Livebox. So it's like the Livebox times a billion, you know?
How many years has that been going? Because that's been going a long time now, hasn't it?
A long time. Yeah. We started it in 2000.
Yeah.
And on and off, and then in different venues. So it's been going for 9 or 8 years now.
Wow. So is that, so every month kind of?
Every Sunday, still weekly. We do it in 12-week batches now.
Okay.
So from September, mid-September, right up until December.
It's like a semester.
Yeah.
Like a
we need a little sabbatical then.
Yeah.
Get ourselves in the process and then recharge our batteries.
Okay.
But this season's going to be exciting. We should have Mark Decline Lowe come down.
Okay.
Ill-Spoken over from New York, quite a few other cats from New York are coming through. So it's turning into quite an international thing now, which is good.
Cool.
So I'd like to say a big thank you to Suetto Kinch for taking the time out of organising the Flyover Show to speak to us. I would also like to say thank you to Claire Edwards for setting the interview up. And just a reminder that the Flyover Show takes place under the Hockley Flyover between 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. on Saturday the 31st of May. Admission's free and there's some great acts playing down there. This is one of the most exciting events that's happening in Birmingham, certainly this month, quite possibly over the whole summer. So I'll be down there. It'd be good to see you there too. For the time being, though, thanks very much for listening to the first of the Created in Birmingham podcasts.